when that ended, I thought, you know, anything can happen in my life from here on out, but I've seen cloud busting with Kate Bush, and you know, I don't know if life can get better than that, but that's pretty up there in moments in your life that touch you and move you and frankly change me again as a person. Like, her music first changed me in 1987. When I saw her again, it changed me, and it brought that much more goodness into my life and light. And seeing Kate, because her art is just unparalleled. There's really no one that can even come close to doing really what she's done through her whole career. And if you're listening to her, if you're really listening, she'll move you in ways that you just can't even imagine. And it's pretty incredible.
Welcome, everybody, to a very special episode of Strange Phenomena, the Music of Kate Bush. So this week, we're going to be doing things a little bit differently because I'm going to be real honest. I've recently gotten a full-time job, and that hasn't left me a ton of time for some of the editing that I need to do. That's not to say that the show is going on hiatus, because believe me, no. We still got songs to talk about. We are not going on hiatus. But I'm having to like figure out my work versus non-work balance. And I realized that Andrea Sheep wasn't going to be ready in time. So instead, we're going to be doing a very special episode about something that happened this week, 5 years ago in 2014. A very big thing in Kate Bush fandom, the Before the Dawn shows. Kate Bush's first set of live concerts in 35 years. And as you guys know, I didn't get to go, but I have gotten to talk with various fans throughout the course of me doing the show who did get to go see it. And in fact, that's going to be the subject of this week's episode. So in honor of the 5 years since Before the Dawn, we are going to be doing a very special episode all about Before the Dawn. Why doing it now? Well, that's because the Ninth Wave, which is going to be the next bit of episodes that are going to be coming out, the Ninth Wave was performed in its entirety in these shows, and it was the first time that anybody had ever gotten to see any visual representations of those songs and also getting to hear Kate actually singing them live. I mean, come on, like, oh my gosh, she's actually singing live. She's not miming. She's actually singing live. Oh my God. So I thought this would be a wonderful thing to put in now because, well, I don't have next week's episode ready, but it has been 5 years since the shows. And I think it's worth talking about these shows because the further we get away from it, the less people are going to remember, as sad as that is. And I'm not trying to make all sad with saying that, but it's true. So the fan I'm going to get to talk with for this episode who got to see those shows live in person is none other than Elizabeth Bracey. And so Elizabeth Bracey is a fan from Portland, Oregon. And she was one of the first Kate fans that I talked with on Twitter when I started putting together the show in 2017. Yeah, so actually it was almost 2 years ago. And we went back and forth about her experience with Kate's music and getting to hear Wuthering Heights, the new vocal version. That was her first exposure to Kate's music back in the 80s. And also Elizabeth told me about getting to go see Before the Dawn. So I made a mental note to hit her up for when I wanted to do a Before the Dawn episode. And I also was really hoping to have her on the Wuthering Heights episode, but that ended up not working out. Fast forward to last week sometime, and Elizabeth contacted me and said, hey, it's been 5 years since Before the Dawn. You should do an episode on it. And I thought, you know what? I think this will be a great stopgap between the last song episode, Cloud Busting, and the next song, which is going to be Dream of Sheep, which is going to come out next week. And so we're going to get to hear all about Elizabeth's experiences getting the tickets for the show, because we all know that was an adventure unto itself. At least that's what I've heard. Getting to the shows, the experience of seeing the show live, and just getting to be among Kate fans all in the same room, and also various celebrity sightings. So without further ado, here is my discussion of the Before the Dawn shows with Elizabeth Bracey, which has just ended. Like, literally, I have just gotten off the phone with her, or rather, I should say Skype. So here we go. Here's Elizabeth Bracey. We're going to let her take it away.
Hello, Sol.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you doing? Yay!
We finally connected.
So yeah, this is fitting because I just realized yesterday was the 5th anniversary, the 5-year anniversary of the first show, Before the Dawn show. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's important we talk about it because with all the craziness in the world, I mean, Kate brings so much good to the world through her art, and without the DVD, I think it's important to like talk about this because, especially for all the fans who couldn't make it, which were a lot.
Yeah, me.
I know you didn't. I know you. And the audio is great, but you can only glean so that's only 50% of what was happening, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So yeah, my 5-year anniversary is coming up September 13th. Yeah, I flew to London on the September 11th, and then that Saturday was my first show. And then my friend Scott from Portland, longtime high school friend, Kate fan, we've been friends since high school. He flew over the 14th, and we went. I had tickets for the 16th show, so we got to go, and it was a really special moment because I got to see his reaction the first time. When she walked out, he turned to me and he said, "That's not Kate Bush." Yeah, Scott, it is. And after the 9th wave ended, the show could have ended there and it would have been just the best thing ever. You realize there's act 3 and you kind of gulp and wonder how you're going to get through it. But after the 9th wave ended, he looked to me and he looked just absolutely dumbstruck. I mean, like, and I know, I've known him for years, and he just could barely gasp out, "That was phenomenal." He didn't know what to make of it. So yeah, whatever you want to talk about. I don't know if you have questions. I mean, the show encompassed so much.
That it did. Well, I have a couple questions, and honestly, I was going to let you do most of the talking because you were there. Oh, and I'm just the enabler, you know. I like to try and run this like a kind of like how Stephen Colbert does his interviews, where it's less about him as the personality and it's more about the guest and how interesting they are.
I just turned 48, so I discovered Kate when I was 15. I actually wrote an essay about it. It was in like some Norwegian fanzine. But the first time I heard her, and it was like nothing else, it was the first few chords to Wuthering Heights' new vocal. And with those few weird, intricate, even I had a piano teacher tell me when he heard that, he's like, "What is she doing?" Mm-hmm. I'm like, "I don't, they're really complicated." From those just few chords, I was dumbstruck. And it was like Kate had grabbed my hand and said, "Come on." Like she does to those of us that have that certain lock, and her music is that key that can open it. Mm-hmm. And immediately I was 15, and it was 1987, and I bought everything, the whole story. Then, you know, just went through, and then The Sensual World came out in 1989. So that was my first new Kate album. And, so yeah. And, you know, after 1993, when she went away, you know, I never gave up hope. And then we found out, you know, she had Albert, you know, Birdie, and he was a part of the show too. It was so wonderful to see the deference and respect and just love he showed Kate and his mom. And in the program, she even stated, without him, these shows would never have happened. She said, before I fully committed, I was ready to back out. And he was the reason so I could see he was her. And it was just so wonderful to see. But anyway, after she went away in 1993 for that long while, you know, I never gave up hope. And then when she popped back up with Ariel, which is my top three of hers, but the one thing I never expected was her to tour again. I remember in 1992, my boyfriend at the time in Tacoma, we went to see Peter Gabriel, the Secret World Tour, you know, Peter and mm-hmm. Kate.
Oh, yeah.
And we walked into the Tacoma Dome and, in, you know, people getting settled, lights were on, you know, and the Central World was playing. And I looked at him and I said, wow, this is the closest we'll come to seeing Kate in concert.
Oh, that's so cool.
In 1992, I even believed that. Because I knew then. I mean, what other artist can you think of that did a small tour in 1979 and that's it? And doesn't really do any promotion, doesn't release things on DVD, doesn't do any of that. She just pops up, does her thing, and says, hope you guys like it, bye. You know, she's really the outlier in the music, in the whole music scene. But I remember that. So the shot came in 2014, that early that year. I was, my ex-boyfriend Jamie, he lived in Oakland, and we were commuting from Portland to Oakland, and he was a huge Kate fan. And we had heard rumblings over in the UK. There had been some things, you know, oh, we had Kate, you know, little snippets. But did any of us ever dream? I mean,
no. I seriously, no.
I mean, I'll never forget it, because Jamie and I ended up breaking up before the shows happened. That night it was about 1 a.m. and we were texting. That Thursday night when the news broke in the UK, and he texted me, I'll never forget it. He texted me, oh my God, Kate Bush live at Hammersmith. And in my gut, I immediately knew she was playing live shows, but instead I just texted back a normal response like, oh, she's finally releasing the 1979 shows, because it was in the same venue, which was very prophetic. Mm-hmm. And then he said, no, she just announced shows, and I lost it. I called him and I started crying, and it was actually going to be spring break, and I was teaching at the time in Portland, so I was going to drive to Oakland anyway, and we had the pre-sale codes, which was very smart of Kate to do. She gave the fans that had signed up, like prior to the announcement, who had signed up at her website, pre-sale codes for the tickets before they went public. So we had those, and we knew, and it was that ticket process, though, just nearly killed me. It was,
oh, I bet.
If you heard that Eventim website, the CAPTCHA was inhumanly possible. I did it like three or four times, and I was right. You know, I thought, don't you think that's the one time in my life I would be absolutely as coherent as possible to like overcome whatever obstacle I needed to like a person, like, I mean, fighting for, I mean, you know, like I got that CAPTCHA right. And each time that was not correct. And then the bank ended up flagging it for fraud because I didn't, you know, and it was just this nightmare. But we ended up, Jamie was on his computer, I was on mine. I got four tickets, he got two. And then the most amazing thing happened, though. It's the strange phenomena that Kate brings together for some of us. That Friday when they went public, or they went public the next week, we were trying to get tickets, and he was trying and trying and trying. And I put two stalls tickets in the basket, and I checked out and got them. And it was really amazing, because it was just, and he looked at me and he dumbfounded. He said, how did that happen? And I said, it's Kate. I was, you know, mm-hmm. But I remember getting that text from him at like 1 a.m. when the news broke, And he could have texted me like, space aliens are invading California right now. I'm coming to Portland. And that would have been a more plausible scenario. And that was the magic of what Kate did, is she kept it. And she had been working on it close to 2 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you had a chance to look at the program at all? Like,
a little bit, yeah. Some of the stuff that people have posted online. Yeah, she was working on it for a while, and how she kept it secret too. Oh my gosh. She did.
I know. And she was very clear, like she wanted to make everyone know that this was a team effort between everybody. But that show 100% came right from Kate Bush. I mean, there was really nothing to describe it. And going in at my first show, I was sad when Jamie and I broke up, even though it was for the best. And I was sad because we were going to go to the shows together. But then I knew that that was right. I knew that I was supposed to see Kate on my own the first time with no one there. It was interesting because I didn't even feel a sense of excitement. And on my second show, I saw Keira Knightley as well. She was there with her husband from afar, and she was showing her ID like everyone else, because that was another smart thing Kate did, making sure everyone's name matched to the ticket, so because she knew scalpers would be there. And but leading up to that first show, I surprised myself because my heart wasn't palpitating. I wasn't really excited. I was excited, but it was almost like I was walking through like a script or something, like kind of like, am I really here? Is this really happening? I'm not at Hammersmith Apollo to see Kate Bush play live. I mean, this isn't happening. Even when I walked in and took my seat, and the best thing I did for myself, the Twitter Kate verse was really great. They kept stuff, spoilers, to a minimum, but I didn't spoil myself at all. I didn't look at the set list. I didn't look at anything. Although the minute I saw that first promo poster in the orange vest, I knew she was going to do the ninth wave. I said, we're getting it. We're getting it after 29 years. She's going to give it to us. And then I assume from the title, she's probably going to do a Sky of Honey, because I also, in one of the interviews for Ariel, she mentioned that's one of the pieces of music she's most proud of, is a Sky of Honey, with good reason. It's genius. And so I knew that, and other than that, I knew nothing. I didn't read anything. I didn't go to Kate Bush News. I didn't go to Homeground. I didn't do any of that. I wanted to be 100% just surprised, not surprised, but just going in. And it wasn't until Kate walked on stage that I lost it, because I think up until that point, I didn't believe it. And 7:45, when the lights dimmed and the announcer said, please put all electronic devices away. And then Kate leads the band out barefoot. I just lost it. And I had no idea what song she was going to play first. But in retrospect, Lily was the perfect choice, because while she was singing it too, it was almost like she was casting that spell around us to protect us. Talking about the angels surrounding us, put your wall around us. And that's why I think she chose Top of the City with its angel themes. Take Me Up, which was really powerful. And Joni, which she sang before that, which I don't think there was a dry eye in the house when she sang that. It was powerful. And those first six songs were just the typical rock portion with, you know. Mm-hmm. After Lily, my shell shockness was still there. But then when I heard it's in the trees, it's coming, I love, because that's one of my, that's always been one of my favorite Kate songs, Hounds of Love, because it's just so brilliant. It just touches me, like, to my soul. And when she sang that, I said, is she really singing this, like, right now? Is Kate Bush singing one of my all-time favorite songs to me right now? She is. But yeah, I cried through that whole first show. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I sobbed. And she did the first six, which was very straightforward. Joni, Top of the City. She included Never Be Mine on the audio, which she didn't play at the show. I think because it made it too long. I don't know what the reasoning was, but she didn't play that. But then, and then, of course, Running Up That Hill, which everyone kind of lost it at.
Oh, God, I know I would have.
Oh, geez, no. And then, I mean, and... of the Mountain, which isn't my favorite Kate song, but boy, in concert it was powerful. She drug that finale out, and then the Bull Roar came out. And he smacked it down and the stage lit up. And then that's when the ninth wave began. And the confetti shot out of the cannons. And these two gentlemen to my right at my first show were from Manchester. And they were kind of worried because I was just sobbing. But they were really sweet. And one of them ran down and got me like a handful of the confetti. Because I'm like, I want to get that. You know? You know, the Tennyson poem. And I mean, what do? Kate Bush is about to perform the ninth wave right there. Like, how does your brain even compute that? But she, seeing what she brought to life there, I don't know if you've seen some of the pictures, but the shipwreck. She recorded the Hello Earth, or not Hello Earth, but And Dream of Sheep video in the water. So that was a pre-made video of her, which is on her channel. Have you seen that?
I have, and it's beautiful. Yeah. And it was my understanding that for that video even, and this is going to come up in the In Dream of Sheep episode, that she made sure the water was nice and cold so she could actually feel like she was this woman drowning at sea.
Yeah.
And it took a while to figure out how exactly to pick up her voice because it was so cold and she's in the water and everything. And yeah, I've seen the video for it. It's very poignant.
It was pretty amazing. And yeah, Kate, in the program, she ended up getting hypothermia, she said, from that. Mm-hmm. Because they wanted to do bigger waves too. And she said, you can't get bigger fucking waves. Because her voice was getting drowned out with the way, you know, Kate, like swearing, like, but anyway. But then with the audio, with the introduction, of course, with the astronomer talking about the scenario. And
hello. Yes, hello. Am I through to the Coast Guard? Over. Yes, look, I'm calling because, I'm out observing the meteor shower tonight. I'm on Church Rock, and I've just received a rather, actually, it's extremely alarming message. It was very faint and staticky. I think he said that his ship's name is Celtic Deep, and that he was sinking. Fast. Well, yeah, no, yes, he gave some coordinates. Yes, he did. He gave a 7, a 9, but the signal was breaking up, and I tried to reply, to tell him that I could hear him, but there was just dead air. Yeah, just now, 2 or 3 minutes ago, just before I called you, the transmission died. Well, hasn't anybody else reported it? Have you not heard anything about it? My name? What's my name got to do with anything? Oh, come on! Come on! If a man says our ship is going down, isn't that enough? Oh, then to hell with your protocol! There's a ship out there! In real trouble. It'll be dark. Look, it's... I need to know that you're gonna do something, please. Well, I don't know. You're the Coast Guard, for fuck... I think these people are depending on me. I'm the only one who heard them. Please. Do you understand? Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? Over? If they find me right.
it was just under ice, and then Kate with her dancers, and then I don't know if you've seen some of the pictures, that just the imagery up there, especially watching You Without Me, where her son took part in that skit, that theater skit. But the house for that was set up like those topsy-turvy houses you see in like fun houses and amusement parks, where the floors are slanted and everything's kind of tilted. Mm-hmm. That's what the house was like. And Kate comes up behind him like she's actually out at sea, like waiting to be rescued, but she's coming back to her son and husband to, you know, watching You Without Me. And they don't know she's there, and she was just singing behind him. One thing which was just crazy, which kind of introduced the imagery, I think, Kate, the feathers throughout the show were just the transformation. I think Birdsong, the feathers, and then going into A Sky of Honey, Kate connected the two, because during Waking the Witch, where they're, you know, Kate was on her knees saying, you know, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Oh, and he was, you know, she's a witch. Kate kind of went under the stage, and she tried to reemerge, and all you see is a blackbird wing, mm-hmm. which indicated later in A Sky of Honey where that she was continuing to make that transformation, which was part of the story she was telling. From that's what I gleaned from it. I mean, you know, do we really know? We never. Jig of Life is one of my favorite songs as well. And seeing that too with Kate, they use some old school theatrical tricks during that, with black curtains, and they were roiling it to look like black waves out at sea. And the way the light was coming down, the little pinpricks of light, it looked like really a roiling black sea, like in the starlight. I mean, the production on it was just... Only Kate could have.
Hello, old lady. I know your face is well. I know it well.
Now
you're sitting in my mirror.
Now is the place where the crossroads meet. You're looking to the future.
Never, never say goodbye.
It was after 1985 was before I got into her, but back then I remember her saying she always wanted to do a visual companion to the Ninth Wave. Mm-hmm. And she was going to do it, but then she got caught up probably in Central World or, you know, doing what she does in her mansion. But yeah, so I think after 29 years seeing that, and it's just a shame there's no DVD, and I kind of get her reasons a little bit. It's just a shame because I know all the other fans want to see what's going on, and there's only so much you can glean from the pictures, you know?
Right.
And the audio. I mean, you want to see what's going on too. But the most amazing thing too, after Jig of Life too, and John Carter Bush's poem, which is some beautiful words. I mean, that poem always hits me so hard. The fish skeleton people were sitting on a sofa and a TV came up out of the stage and he had recorded the spoken word to it. So that was shown on the stage while the waves were going.
Over here. Over here. Can't you see where memories are kept right? Tripping on the water like a laughing girl. Time in her eyes is spawning parts like rock with the ocean and the woman unfurls. Holding all the love that waits for you here. Catch us now, for I am your future. A kiss on the wind and we'll make the land. Come over here to where a wind lingers, waiting in this empty world. Waiting for then when the light spray cools. For now does ride in on the curl of a wave. And you will dance me the sunlit pools. We are the going water and the gone. We are water and the holy land of water. All that's to come runs in with a thrust on the strand.
And then we get into Hello Earth, which, I mean, that was worth the price of admission alone. I mean, just if Kate had done that one song. Really? I mean, come on. I mean, that song touches some universal chord. It's almost like she reached up into the ether and, like, plucked it out. But Birdie was up on the buoy and one of the other cast members, and Kate was climbing up singing Hello Earth on the buoy. And it was pretty intense because that's, I think, always, it's one of the songs I think a lot of us Kate fans come back to when we talk about, you know, her genius, her ability to condense things into, you know, feelings and emotions into like a moment and strike that chord with all of us, mm-hmm. you know, that recognize that. And the way she can tell a story and the way she can even tell a simple story, not a simple story, but a story about a woman lost at sea, hoping to be rescued and come up with something as beautiful as the ninth wave. It's, but this is coming from the girl that wrote Man with Child in His Eyes at 13. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's insane right there. I mean, that's almost just unreal. But the amazing thing is, and a Kate friend I had in the UK, Matt, had on the forums had said, go to the side door after Hello Earth, you'll thank me. And so I walked down, and as Kate climbs off the buoy at the end of Hello Earth, when the Nosferatu choir is playing, you know, that sample, mm-hmm. She gets on the litter and she's held aloft by the six fish skeleton people. This is not a phrase I ever thought I would say. And I watched Kate Bush be carried on a litter by six fish skeleton people. I mean, this is literally only a show Kate Bush could do.
Of course.
And it took forever because they kept swaying back like they were taking their time. It was a very slow procession. They came down through the audience on the floor. Kate's on the litter, you know, possibly, we don't know. Is she rescued? Is she dying? We don't know. And they carry her through the audience out the side door to where the bathrooms were. And so that's why my friend Matt at the forum, he said, just go down to that door. And they carry her off through there and disappear. And then about 2 or 3 minutes later, well, the whole place was just silent. And you could have, only Kate opens the door and reemerges. And I was about, I don't know, 12, 15 feet from her. And she walks through the audience on the floor. And all of us are just like, our mouths are chiming. And she comes up on the stage and everyone just erupts because what we had just witnessed, we saw the ninth wave and we know the morning fog's coming. Mm-hmm. And I found a little snippet of that on YouTube. And I can see why Kate really hasn't released the DVD because it doesn't capture what was there. You can see it. I mean, it does to a certain extent, but not like what it was to actually be there. And everyone was just losing it because she just walked through the audience, walked up on stage in the night and Morning Fog's playing. And it was really poignant because when she said, at the end, she said, I'll tell my mother, I'll tell my father. And she said, I'll tell my son. And then Birdie stepped up and took a bow. And then everyone went crazy for him because we knew he was the reason. Like, if it wasn't for him, the shows would never have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I told my mother. Goodness. Thank you. Thank you. What an overwhelming response. Thank you so much.
And so then that's act two, and then you realize Kate says there's a 20-minute intermission. We'll be back with Act Three, and then you realize, how am I even going to get through this? The show could have ended there and still been, the best show of all time. I mean, there was just no comparison. It was the show, and Neil Gaiman, the writer, he's one of my favorite authors. Mm-hmm.
Yep, he's one of my husband's favorite writers as well.
Oh yes, I follow him on Twitter and. It was funny because he went to the show and I have his tweets liked from back then too. And he tweeted 3 or 4 in a row and he was just speechless. And I always think to myself, so what makes Neil Gaiman speechless? Kate Bush.
So it seems.
And it was interesting because that was one thing the Twitterverse did is everyone who was at the shows I could see from the follows just say all the other, quote, famous people that were at the shows. And it was just, there were so many every night. I saw Keira Knightley. I believe Paul McCartney was there my last night at my third show, but I didn't pay any attention. I mean, I'm there for Kate Bush.
Yeah.
I mean, Kira, you're great, But then you realize the ninth wave ended and you take a breather and then act three, A Sky of Honey. And that was amazing in its own right. It's definitely, Kate tied in the bird song, the air and the space, the theme she was working on Ariel and the sound. And it was just... Oh, and Birdie had a new song. She wrote a song for him, and he had a solo song, The Tawny Moon, if you've heard that. And I thought he did a great job. He wasn't some people's cup of tea, but he really put his all into it, and you could tell. He didn't take it for granted. And his words in the program were so, for his mom, I was reading, he said, I could think of no one else more talented that I could work with than my mother.
Aww.
And he said, I've worked really hard to earn my place in the show. And just to see the love and respect, I mean, of course, Kate has for him and he has for her.
Yeah. But, and, I really liked his song as well. I, I read that some people really like it, some people don't. I think he has a beautiful voice like his mother, you know.
I do.
I would not expect anything less of the son of Kate Bush to not have a beautiful voice, you know?
I know. And
give every cloud a silver lining. Every star will be bright and shining. 20-owl swoop, the howling wolf, every swimming pool will shiver with excitement. I may the wind blow and the starry heavens hang. I ache from head to toe, I've got blisters on my hands.
He even his acting too, he put his all into it, and he didn't, and he was one of the backup people. He never tried to overshadow or, you know, he just, whenever he was there, he just gave it his all, and just all of us. And, you know, the thing I realized too is a couple months after the shows ended, Kate put that note up on her fan, on her site. And I don't think it was until after those shows that she really truly realized how she touches people. Because that note she wrote to us, she said, I felt the love. I felt every single night I felt the love. And I don't know if she'll ever play again. I hope she does. But it was, I think it really cemented in her, because she's always been so averse to fame. She doesn't play that game. I mean, 35 years between live shows. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's insane, really, to have someone of her caliber. I mean, that you just doesn't happen. No one, you know, she just has never played that game. And, you know, the, was it 12-year hiatus between Red Shoes and Ariel too, where she, well, her mom died, and then she had Albert. But when she announced the shows, even though I had no idea what the set list was going to be, I immediately knew she wasn't going to do anything prior to 1985. Like, the big question was, is she going to do Wuthering Heights? And my answer was always, no, I know she's not. I know she's not. Because it was almost like, I think she's been there, done that, you know? And I know some people were, why didn't she do it? Well, she did do it again, you know, back on the whole story. I just felt like, I think maybe she felt like that part of her poor career was closed, even though I would have loved to hear something from The Dreaming, but.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Since that's my favorite. Hounds is right up there, but The Dreaming is that's my favorite probably of all time. It's perfect. It's to hear. If I could have heard Suspended in Gaffa or Houdini or Night of the Swallow, I think that everyone would have. The whole theater would have just like, mm-hmm.
Well, there was a rumor that she was considering doing Sat in Your Lap.
I didn't hear that. Or on it for a new one, or at the shows?
At the shows. Like, oh, in the first part of the show where it was like your standard rock concert.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been great.
Mm-hmm. Because nothing from The Dreaming has been sung live.
I know. And I think Kate, I know she's called that her crazy album, but I really feel that album is the closest we'll come to hearing her brain work. I really think that, well, Hounds is the one that everyone goes to as the masterpiece, which is with good reason. I mean, come on. It's Hounds of Love, which is, it's right there. It's right up by The Dreaming, but The Dreaming is just, I mean, it's almost like she went to her home planet, made it, and came back and brought it to us Earthlings or something, because it's just so perfect and dynamic. And even to this day, I hear something new when I listen to it.
But The Dreaming is number one, followed by Hounds of Love, and then
Kick Inside, maybe?
Never Forever.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The Sensual World, Lionheart.
Oh, that's a great one.
Kick Inside. Yes, I like Lionheart a little more than Kick Inside. then probably Ariel. Red Shoes and Director's Cut and 50 Words for Snow.
Yeah. Yeah, I still haven't fully gotten into 50 Words as much as I should. Now, she did play her penultimate song before Cloud Busting when she came out. After A Sky of Honey ended, which was like, that whole suite was like bordering between a dream and like the best nightmare you've ever had, because the sun, there was the huge sun, and then the puppet, I don't know if you saw the marionette, the old school puppet that Kate had, and these giant wooden doors that came out, and these trees that came down, and the bird imagery that was just so, that she had started in the ninth wave to continue, had kept going in A Sky of Honey. And Sunset was just amazing. That everyone kind of was just, if you've heard that, I mean, it's one of her, that's one of my favorite songs, probably in my top 10. It's genius. Got everyone going, and Birdie had his song, and then Nocturne, and then when Ariel happened, it almost everything built up to like this frenzy, and you had the bird masks come out, which you could see in Ariel a little bit, those pictures, you know, like and Kate put on this raven's blackbird and was dancing around on the stage with it. And everything was building up to this frenzy, and they were in these, like, you know, nightmarish kind of bird masks. And right before right before the song ended, another tree came down and it appeared to smash through Kate's piano. It was pretty genius how the special effect was done. Because it happened every time, and it looks like it crashes through the piano. And then Kate disappears. And then right at the end of Ariel, she flew out as a blackbird transformed on wires. And that's what you don't get on the audio. And yeah, and my jaw dropped, and that was the end of that story she was telling. She had made that transformation, and she flew out from behind the curtains on wires as a blackbird. I mean,
wow.
That's Kate Bush, and I was blessed enough to go to 3 shows, which was because the first one I was incoherent, really. The second one I was semi there. And by the third one, I was like, oh, seeing Kate Bush is old hat now. No, I mean, how lucky am I? And I was able to fully absorb it. But at each show, it was so cute, too, because when Kate, after Ariel ended, we knew there was going to be an encore, but she thanked everybody. And then they all went behind the stage, and then Kate pops back out. And she walks across the stage to her piano, and we know what's going to come, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just her, and she sits down, and I didn't know what she was going to sing that first time. And it was Among Angels, and it's the angel theme again, you know, the angels around us, the angels watching over us. And she said, but at each show, it never failed in that, like, you could hear a pin drop in that theater, that small theater that she chose for a reason. But at each show, during that like brief moment when she sat down at the piano to play, a random guy would always yell out, "I love you, Kate!" And we would chuckle, and then everyone would be quiet. But I don't think there's another artist like Kate Bush who could ask everyone to put their cameras away, and everyone will. And I didn't see one camera out at any of the shows,
which
is another, you know, disappointing reason we don't have the DVD, because, you know, that's what kind of we were expecting. I'm hopeful maybe Bertie will convince her.
I hope so. You know what? He convinced her to go on stage. Maybe he can convince her to put out the frickin' DVD.
Yeah, because even if she thinks, which I know a part of her probably thinks, it can't capture that live experience connecting with the audience, you can still see what's going on and connect with it as a viewer. So I hope she does change her mind at some point. I kind of have a feeling she's working on something now. It's been 5 years. She put out the remasters, which, you know, is great, and the lyric book, but I'm just hoping for a new album soon, you know? Maybe she's always been a fall-winter release person,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it I'm hoping, you know, we can hope for a new album or, I was actually pretty shocked she didn't do this woman's work though at the show. That's one that I kind of was thinking she might do, which kind of is still surprising that she didn't do that one, but you know, who are we to question our Kate, you know, she's.
She does things as she wishes, that's for sure.
I mean, she gave us a 3-hour show. I mean, you know, the one song, if I always ask myself, what's the one song if I could have chosen that she would have played? And my answer is always the same. It's A Choral Room. I waver between that and Under the Ivy, but I think if Kate had played A Choral Room, I don't think she'll ever play that live because of how personal it is. And I just think that was why she just decided it wasn't part of that, what she wanted to tell either. But that would be the one, I think. But
yeah, I would have liked Under the Ivy, too, because that's a top favorite.
It is. That's one of my favorites. And it's just, it's so Kate that she thought, oh, that's a B-side.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's worthy of a B-side. And all of us are like, that's our top five of all time. Like, a lot of Kate, I mean, you know, that's a lot of Kate fans. Do put it with good reason. I mean, you know. But yeah, I remember before the shows too, there were rumors that David Bowie was going to join her on stage. And I mean, you know, which I think would have blew everyone. I mean, that would have just blown everyone. I mean, our minds would have just been, this can't be happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I do think he attended one of the shows, but like maybe in a different seating area so as not to distract or, you know. Did you have other questions or anything?
Well, actually, you mentioned, so you went to 3 shows, correct?
I did, yeah.
Did you go alone all 3 times or did somebody else come with you? I know you had an ex-boyfriend,
No, yeah, Jamie and I broke up before, so I went to the first show alone.
Okay.
And it was sad, actually. There were people always in a queue outside Hammersmith, day or night, that had flown there from all over the world, begging for tickets, just please one ticket. So I actually just sold my other ticket at face value to a person there and made their life. I mean, because Jamie and I were supposed to go and we broke up even, you know, which was, I mean, it worked. It was for the best. But, and then my second show on the 16th, my good friend Scott had flown over, so we got to see that together. And then my third show was the same. I went on my own. So, but it was perfect because it started with Kate and I, and it ended with Kate and I, which mm-hmm. I think was how it's supposed to be. And even Scott talks about it to this day as the best gig. I mean, there would be no topping it. I mean, you know, and people were joking when she announced it because it, you know, it pretty much stopped the world. I mean, her website crashed, the news, especially BBC, they were pulling everybody in, breaking news. It even made like a small little newspaper in Vietnam. That's how big that the news was. And no one really even knew what to expect, but everyone was saying, like, no matter what she does, it's going to be great. I mean, she could come out and read her shopping list and we would be hanging on every word. Yeah. Literally. I mean, really. I mean, she's, you know, the term recluse, I think, was invented for Kate Bush because she's truly, especially if you watch those early videos of her when she was 18, 19, 20, such poise and intelligence, and you can pull out. She's truly never been into this fame or celebrity, and for her to give us what she gave us, a 3-hour plus just journey into, like, I mean, it was, as much as I would want to see the 1979 shows and go back in time, like, if I had to choose, it would be Before the Dawn, because I really feel like she took us someplace. It was in her mind, it was in her imagination. Her ability to tell a story is just unparalleled, and it was almost just unreal. And the way she connected with the audience too, she And it was good I got to see three shows as well, because even I could tell between September 13th and the 24th is she was much more relaxed. Mm-hmm. And her speaking voice between is just so, I mean, you just melt. I mean, she's at the last show at the end, she said, I know some of you have come from very far away or just around the corner. I hope you all get home safely, you know, and we're just, like Kate saying bye. It's, you know, I mean, but I could tell in that note she wrote after the shows and she had had time to reflect that she finally got it. And I know she thinks a lot of us are just crazy, you know, like, but I think she really got how much she touches people and how her music has the ability, if you're truly listening to it, to reach into your soul and to make your spirit soar and to tell stories that, I mean, really that only Kate Bush can tell. And that was the part of the whole show that just seeing that come to fruition, because we've seen how visual she can be in her videos and the way she can paint pictures with her music. And that was an interesting comment by one of the creative advisors on Before the Dawn, or her lighting directors. One of them said, Kate sees music as well as hears it. And I that makes total sense, because each part of Before the Dawn was almost like the perfect visualization for what you're listening to. Mm-hmm. Especially A Sky of Honey the feathers came down at the end and there was like snow and almost like the Sensual World video where she's walking in the forest and there's...
What was your... I know, because there was so much to take in, but what was your favorite part of the show?
I have to say the Ninth Wave. I can't get away from that. It was everything that I had been listening to for the last, 25 years on that, with my earbuds or with microphones, hearing every echo, and to see it visually come to life with the shipwreck, the roiling waves, the manic, the fish skeleton people, I mean, that were always lurking around, like, menacing until the end when they took them off in the morning fog, which was the celebration. And the one thing that Kate clarified for me on the Ninth Wave is I had always gotten over these years the interpretation that possibly my inclination was that the woman had died and drowned, because I kind of had seen the morning fog as a rebirth into heaven, maybe, where she's falling and everything. But Kate had intended that all along as the woman was rescued. She's been rescued and now... being so near death, she's so thankful for everyone she loves, and she's so happy to be back alive. And that was what brought everyone to tears at the end of A Morning Fog, when she was, you know, she's saying, I'll tell my mother, you know, and of course her mother died in 93, tell my father, I'll tell my loved one, I'll tell my son how much I love them. And then at that very end, just everyone just lost it. It was just... my favorite has to be, the Ninth Wave. A Sky of Honey, though, I mean, I feel like I'm almost being disrespectful to that by saying the Ninth Wave is my favorite. But I think it also is because that one is more personal to me, because I've been listening to that album since 1987. And just that... I mean, the crown jewel of all that, of course, going back to Hello Earth. I mean, Kate's voice has mellowed, but boy, she was note perfect on that. And it sounded to me like I just like the original. It was even better because it was coming right from her into my ears. And The one thing I wished we had seen of more throughout the shows, which I can't even believe I'm saying that, is her just at the piano. Mm-hmm. But we got Prologue, which started off A Sky of Honey, when the huge doors open, the, I don't know, 20, 30 feet high doors on stage, and the puppet came out, which was controlled by that man in black, which is old school how they do it. The puppet was a child-sized, like, wooden puppet. And Kate was at the piano and she whispers, over here. over here. And Prologue was really beautiful. She was starting to interact with the puppet and then at her piano. And then, of course, we also got Among Angels, which was the second to last song, just her at the piano. And it was just, everyone was just stone silent in there because it was just Kate Bush and her piano. And at my third show, when she played Among Angels, I actually just closed my eyes and I just let it wash over me. And I thought, because she's singing this right now to me, Kate Bush at her piano, and this is probably the last time I'm going to hear Kate Bush at her piano. Mm. And it was almost like an epiphany, almost, because the song is so beautiful and talking about, you know, someone that's always loved you forever. You just don't know it. And then I didn't even know what song she was going to end with until my first show, and then Cloud Busting. And at that third show, you could tell she was so much more relaxed, and she was saying, "Everyone get up. I want you to get up." We're all up, you know, we're up and just like, rah! Cause we were sitting down. We didn't want to disrespect Kate, you know, but she's like, "Yeah," and we're all just like, bolt up, right? What do you want? We'll do it. And she says, "Everyone sing along," you know. And so all of us were swaying back. Yay, yay, yay.
Show today, it was great to talk to you as always, and yay!
Oh, it's been so great. Thank you so much. It's one of my favorite subjects to talk about, Kate Bush, especially to someone else who gets it, you know, because you have to get it, or else, I mean, I think to other people we may sound like raving lunatics, but we get it. We know. I mean,
yeah, we do. You know, it's, you know, what? Honestly, it's like any fandom.
Yeah, it really is. Like, and you know, it's really like, and talking about the shows and helping relive it too has made me like, I have it on in my car now all the time, and listening to Lily and hearing Hounds and hearing Hello Earth and Sunset and then just Kate at her piano and Among Angels, your heart just explodes. It's just really does.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.